This is the 2020 State House Podcast, brought to you by South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Funding is brought to you in part by SDN Communications, the South Dakota Bar Foundation, Missouri River Energy Services, and Touchstone Energy Cooperatives. South Dakota senators are sending a bill that changes vote thresholds and the appeals process for conditional use permits. Supporters say it will prevent rural development from being stymied by the vocal few. Critics say it eliminates the right of the public to object and challenge county decisions. SDPB's Lee Strubinger reports.
Governor Kristi Noem's county zoning and appeal process bill narrows the definition of an aggrieved party. That party would need to have suffered an injury that is, quote, concrete and particularized, not hypothetical. It also requires an appellant to show their injury is different from injuries suffered by the public in general. The bill is aimed at the conditional use permitting process. Conditional use permits are needed for developments like hog barns, wind farms, and utility projects. Noem says businesses who want to develop in rural South Dakota want to know the rules of the game.
They want an open process that's honest and to make sure that they can come in and have some consistency when these projects are being planned. That is what Senate Bill 157 does.
The bill doesn't change county-level setbacks, she adds. It's meant to deter what she calls frivolous lawsuits. Lawmakers struck a provision in the bill that allows judges to award damages to a farmer or defendant who prevails in court. It gives those who wish to appeal a permit decision 21 days to do so. The courts then have 60 days to rule on an appeal. Senator Craig Kennedy says he sees problems with the bill. The Democrat from Yankton says it could exclude those who have valid concerns on a conditional use permit decision. He says frivolous lawsuits should be limited, but...
On the other hand, there are times when people may have a valid, legitimate reason for objecting, and those people shouldn't be held to the same standard as the people who do things vexatiously or frivolously. And that's my concern.
Other critics of the bill worry it's a statewide solution for problems occurring in two or three counties in the state. Senators are sending the bill over to the House on a 24-11 vote. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierre.
The legislature is taking its first step towards approving a need-based scholarship program. The Dakota's Promise Scholarship serves Pell-eligible low-income students who score at least 22 on the ACT and have at least a 3.0 GPA. Senate Bill 72 sets aside $2 million from this year's general fund for the scholarship. Each recipient will receive $1,250 from the state fund and a matched fund from their college or university. In committee, President of Northern State University Tim Downs points to the widespread consensus among higher education institutions in the state.
When you look at the Student Federation, which consists of all the student government agencies at every campus, they've all passed a resolution that says they're in support of Dakota Promise. And then you look at all the campus presidents, as well as the Board of Regents. This is our number one priority.
The Board of Regents Executive Director Paul Barron says enrollment of students with the same criteria outlined for the Dakota's Promise Scholarship has dropped by 22% since 2011. Senate Bill 72 is also supported by the state's private colleges and universities. A similar bill failed in the House last year, but this year's version adds academic requirements to address previous concerns. The bill heads next to the Senate floor. Today on In the Moment, host Lori Walsh invited a bunch of SDPB journalists to join her for a legislative roundtable where they discuss what they've been covering and what they will be covering this week. Let's take a listen.
And let's get right to our South Dakota Public Broadcasting Legislative Roundtable this week. We've got SDPB journalists from across the state joining us. Lee Strubinger is with us from the press room in the State Capitol building. Hey, Lee.
Hi, Lori.
Jackie Henry is joining me in the Kirby Family Studio in SDPB's Sioux Falls studio. Welcome back, Jackie.
Hi, Lori.
And Stephanie Ristler is joining us from the SDPB studios in Vermilion on the campus of the University of South Dakota. Stephanie, welcome back.
Thank you.
I want to start with Stephanie, and then we're going to jump to Lee because he's going to expand on some of the things that Stephanie's sort of laying out. But first, if we could start the stage with you, Stephanie, and the recent South Dakota focus. Tell us about your topic and let's go from there.
Yeah, so last week we decided to take a closer look at some of these bills that have been brought to the South Dakota legislature, really aimed at our LGBTQ plus individuals. We had reached out to some of the prime sponsors of the bills, and unfortunately not everyone was interested in reaching back to me, or they couldn't get back to me. State Representative Fred Deutsch, he did contact me, and we had tried to figure out a way to have him join us for this conversation, but it did not work. So what we ended up doing was bringing in some clips from the committee hearings that happened, and then we brought people onto the panel to really talk about the impact these bills, if they were to come to law, would have on them. They also talked about the impact this was having just on them with the conversations circling around the state and even making it to the national news. So I had Ellie Krug. She joined me. She's a lawyer, a humanitarian. She's a national speaker, a transgender woman from the Minnesota area. Lori, I know she's been on with you recently, but she's traveled the country educating all kinds of organizations on transgender people. She spoke to what she's seen in South Dakota and really across the country regarding this anti-transgender movement.
Much of this is about fear. And I believe that there are only in the country a certain small group of people that are very vocal, but then there are a lot of other people who don't understand and who've never ever met a transgender person. And what they're hearing is misinformation from maybe faith leaders or from political commentators, and they're going with that, but they've never had the opportunity. And I happen to believe that if we could have a reset, a national reset, where we could have a conversation and people could get to know transgender people, they'll realize that we are just like everybody else.
And Stephanie, this wasn't the only bill that is making its way through peer that is directed at transgender issues or gay marriage issues. Or tell us a little bit about HB 1215. And then in just a minute, Lisa Rubiner is going to kind of expand on that.
So it's not yet been debated. But yes, House Bill 1215, it really will prohibit the state from endorsing or enforcing certain policies regarding domestic relations. So basically same-sex marriages. Libby Screen with the ACLU, she joined us this past Thursday and laid out the different things that the bill will do should it become law.
The bill itself would forbid the state from recognizing same-sex marriages, mm-hmm. from issuing same-sex marriage licenses, from providing benefits to spouses who are of the same sex. It would also refuse to recognize the existence of transgender mm-hmm. people. And last but not least, it would prevent public libraries from hosting drag queen-themed events.
Now, Stephanie, one of the really interesting things has been, as we have these conversations, how much misinformation is out there. And you had Ann Dillenschneider on talking about that as well, didn't you?
Yeah, she came on and she provided some, you know, very informative information. There has been some things said through some of the lawmakers. Some of the things that have been reported aren't quite right in terms of the medical procedures and what age certain kids need to be and what exactly can be done to certain folks and what age that is. And so she came on, really tried to set the record straight, specifically on the parents' involvement with the transition process, what those age requirements are for even considering like a hormone blocker, including surgery, and how all of this is impacting our transgender youth who struggle with depression and even suicide thoughts.
Parents are always in the room because they are the child's best support. When we get to puberty blockers, that's only between Tanner stage 2 and 16. There are no medical procedures, no surgeries, no nothing. At 16, we start to talk about possibly hormones, estrogen, testosterone. No surgeries are done until a person is an adult. And everything has to have, up till 18, has to have parental consent. They're throwing lots of terms in as if things are happening that are not happening.
Okay.
And I mean, I literally have people teenagers go from being suicidal to fine, not depressed, not suicidal, not anxious anymore.
All right. What comes next with this conversation, Stephanie?
So House Bill 1057, it died in committee. So at this point, we're just really waiting to see what's going to happen with House Bill 1215. I know it's something that Leah has been following as well. At this point, House Bill 1215 is the only one that's left that the folks that we had on the show have any concerns about.
All right. And you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation just the impact this is having on people as the conversations on this program and other programs. Tomorrow we're going to have two guests of people who don't live in South Dakota anymore. And this legislation is one of the things they were concerned about, but there were others, and they're going to talk about living on either coast and sort of being from this place and what it means and how they still want to be involved in South Dakota legislation. Tell us a little bit about what was said on your show regarding just the impact.
So Samson Mettler was on the show. Samson is a transgender male, 22 years old, has become very involved and vocal in helping to educate anybody who will listen as to the true effects on him, on people that he knows. But he said that, you know, a lot of his friends, they are leaving South Dakota. And if this trend continues in terms of seeing more legislation like this, he thinks that we'll continue to see more people leave.
And what's really unfortunate is the more they pass these bills, or try to pass these bills, I should say, the more they're pushing out kids of this state. I have friends who moved out of this state who are LGBTQ, and they ask me why I'm still here. Yeah. But if there's not a place, it's hard to stay.
Mm. Yeah. And we talk about, how often do we talk, Stephanie, about, kids in agriculture wanting to come home and live in South Dakota and sort of paving the way so that we can make that happen, or kids in college, making sure our best and brightest stay in South Dakota. So this idea of wanting to stay in your home is definitely not unique to the transgender community.
That's correct. And Samson, born and raised in Sioux Falls, loves Sioux Falls, doesn't want to go. And I applaud Samson for stepping up and trying to be that positive voice and really educating, being an advocate for his own truth and some of the misinformation that he's seeing presented out there.
And you can see that entire South Dakota Focus on our website, as you can all the episodes and stuff. Some of the things I've just been hearing from people are, this was an opportunity for them to meet transgender people. They didn't know anything. And at first, you know, some people said it was a little weird, or I was a little uncomfortable, but they got to just sit and watch and listen, providing an opportunity that they really hadn't had before in a lot of ways. So thank you for your work on that, South Dakota Focus, as we all try to understand things that maybe we didn't before.
Sure.
Yeah. Lee, Stephanie's talking about this bill, HB 1215, and that brings us to this broader conversation we want to have this this day on our legislative roundtable about crossover day and what a busy week it is. So tell us what's happening this week in Pierre.
Sure. So Wednesday is the last day for bills to leave their house of origin. So the House will take action on most of their 293 bills, and the Senate on 186 of their bills. They've already done a majority of that work, but today and tomorrow, you know, there's going to be a lot of action taken on some of those remaining bills in the hopper. And for the House, I say most because 1215 has not been assigned to a committee yet. And today is the last day, or today is one of the last days that a committee like House State Affairs, where this bill might come up, it's the last day that they might meet before crossover day. And, you know, as Libby Screen, explained earlier, that 1215 is a bill that seeks to do many things when it comes to the state's marriage policies, including prohibiting licensing marriages for same-sex couples, but also eight other things not quite related to marriage policy. And from a procedural standpoint, legislation is generally tries to stay reserved to a single topic, and this has several, many of which, some call having some constitutionality questions.
Well, deciding what a library can program and what a library can't program seems like a very, distinct issue from some of these other things that, as you say, would be almost definitely constitutionally challenged.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But what I find interesting about 1215 is that since it hasn't been assigned to a committee yet, technically something has to happen to this bill. It has to go to a committee or get withdrawn. And here's Republican Lee Qualm. He's the majority leader in the House. He's not in charge of assigning bills, but you know, he zeroes in and says that something has to happen with this legislation.
Anything that's out there, you're having discussion with the sponsor and, you know, what do you want to do? It's ultimately his decision where he wants to go with it. If he wants to send it to a committee or if he wants to withdraw it. I mean, leadership, you know, we can give advice, we can do all that, but he's the only one that can push the withdraw button. None of us can do that. That's up to him totally.
And Lee, there's just one sponsor of this bill, right?
Yes, correct. So, and
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that there are a few things that could happen today or tomorrow. If it does end up in a committee, you know, they generally like to have 24 hours notice so people interested in testifying on the bill can come to peer and testify on it. And so that, you know, that 24 hour window is really drawing down at this point.
Which was one of the criticisms when session first started with House Bill 1057 was that it was timed in a way that people couldn't get to peer to testify at. Now we're looking at potentially the same situation. At that time, it was postponed because of weather, and that problem is solved. But the weather's looking pretty good. So this could be a short turnaround for people to have their voices heard. It's crossover week. It's a busy week. All the bills have to move to their next house from their house of origin on Wednesday. One of those bills that's still alive is Governor Kristi Noem's County Zoning and Appeals Process Bill, which senators sent over to the House last Friday, but not before making a change to us. Lee, tell us what happened.
Sure. So Senate Bill 157 makes some changes to the conditional use permitting and appeals process. The change was made to this bill that if a challenge to a permit is made and it makes its way into the courts. So before, Noem's bill allowed judges to award compensatory damages suffered by a, let's say, a farmer whose hog barn is being challenged. And compensatory damages was unclear to a lot of legislators, and so an amendment was brought to that to strike that from the bill.
All right, so remind us what some of those changes are to the conditional use permitting process.
Sure. So Senate Bill 157, it requires that all counties, when voting on a conditional use permit, they must approve it with a simple majority of members present. However, if a permit is challenged, it requires a two-thirds majority of a vote to overturn it. Some counties require a two-thirds majority to approve, so it's kind of scaling that back for some counties. The bill also zeroes in on the definition of who can appeal a permit decision. That party would need to have suffered an injury that is, quote, concrete and particularized and not necessarily hypothetical. It also requires an appellant to show their injury is different from injuries suffered by the public in general. And I should say real quick that conditional use permits are used for a variety of things from wind farms to hog barns to other utility projects. Back to the appeal process, it gives those who wish to appeal a permit decision 21 days to do so, and then the county has 60 days to rule in on that appeal.
All right, we'll be keeping close tabs on that one. Jackie Hendry is also with us here in Sioux Falls. And Jackie, tell us a little bit about some of the legislation that you're following, Senate Bill 72.
Yeah, so this was the bill to establish the Dakota's Promise Scholarship, and this just went through committee on Friday. So this bill establishes a needs-based scholarship program, which is something South Dakota hasn't yet started up on. It's pretty common throughout most of the country. Multiple testifiers cited South Dakota being the only state without a needs-based program. But this bill establishes a fund, makes an appropriation, and declares an emergency, which in a bill means that as soon as the governor signs it, we're not waiting until July 1st for this law to go in effect. It's immediate. So the idea being that the state offers students a certain amount of money if they meet certain qualifications, and then the institution they attend matches that amount, and that amount being $1,250 from each side, totaling up to $2,500 for students.
Who is eligible? Who does it impact?
So, of course, you have to be a South Dakota resident, but this is focused on Pell Grant eligible students. And Pell Grants are from the Federal Department of Education focused on low-income students. So not only do you have to be South Dakota resident, Pell eligible, you also need to score at least a 22 on the ACT, have a high school GPA of 3.0 or higher, and, of course, attend a campus in South Dakota, minimum of 12 credit hours a semester. But this bill has been heard before. It failed in its last leg last year, still focused on Pell-eligible students, but kind of that opposition was, okay, so once we can get these students to college, who's to say that they are necessarily academically prepared? So this is why this year in the bill, they're adding those kind of academic criteria, the test scores and the high school GPA for eligibility as well, hoping that this will lessen those concerns and better the bill's odds.
All right. So who are the folks who are, you know, who are the voices that are speaking for this from mm-hmm. a sponsorship standpoint?
Right. So the Board of Regents have had a bill like this their priority for a couple years now. The board has pointed to a lack of needs-based scholarships as part of the drive behind the dropping full-time enrollment numbers that they're seeing. So Paul Barron is the executive director and CEO of the Board of Regents, and he spoke in favor of this bill in the Senate State Affairs Committee.
If you look at this cohort and take everything in it except not being eligible for Pell, which means they have more support from home, from other places, this group of students with these same exact criteria graduate at 71% in 4 years. The group who has these qualifications and need Pell are eligible for Pell graduate at 51%. Now, what that tells you is there is one variable there, and it's all about dollars and support.
So just to restate that again, you know, all other variables equal, there can be a 20% difference in graduation rates between students who are lower income and those who aren't. So same academic criteria comes down to that financial support.
Can you articulate the need for this in South Dakota?
Yeah, there were a wide variety of percentages and numbers bandied about in committee. Not only the BOR speaking in favor of this, all state universities, presidents speaking in favor, and also all private universities and colleges in the state in favor of this. And every one of these schools has done fundraising to be able to match these funds. Speaking from Board of Regents status still, the percentage of students attending BOR schools who meet these criteria, so say in high school you're free and reduced lunch eligible, that usually means that you're going to be Pell eligible. In higher ed, 22 on the ACT. 72% of students attended Board of Regents schools in 2011. So 72% of those students. But then in 2018, that number dropped to 50%. So a pretty exceptional drop in enrollment in Board of Regents institutions, pointing to probably the needs-based issue. Paul Barron also saying of those students who attend Board of Regents, 70% or more will stay in the state, thereby building up workforce and South Dakota's economy. But I was really interested in testimony from Barry Dunn. He's the president of South Dakota State University. He's a historian of early public education in the land-grant university system. And he shared some of the original idea behind the public education system.
In 1862, Abraham Lincoln changed the course of human history by signing the Morrill Act, creating the first model for public higher education in human history. It provided a federal enhancement for states to fund institutions of higher education for, to paraphrase Justin Morrill, the sons and daughters of toil. Before the Morrill Act, the benefits of higher education were reserved for the wealthy and the elite. Many of us in this room today, sons and daughters of toil, have been the beneficiaries of public higher education.
So President Dunn, like other presidents who spoke in committee, noted the number of Pell-eligible students at his particular institution and how that percentage has fallen in recent years, just as we said, for the Board of Regents overall. But he closed his testimony in favor of this bill with this question to the committee.
And with the utmost respect, I think we as leaders of our state need to ask ourselves the following question. What will be the cost to our communities, economy, society, and our democracy if we choose not to provide just a little extra lift today to today's sons and daughters of toil?
Compelling testimony about this. Let's talk about that cost, though.
Right. Cost versus investment, per se.
Right.
So, but either way, we're looking at this bill appropriating $2 million from the state's general fund. This is a one-time appropriation to kind of test and see how this works out. And again, that money being matched by universities. So each student from that $2 million in the state would get $1,250, then matched by their university for a total of $2,500 for students who would receive the Dakota's Promise Scholarship.
And the question also has to be asked, is it enough?
That is another question.
A huge amount of money when you're looking at the overall scholarship to get someone started.
Yep. Yeah, and so, even students currently receiving Pell Grants, there's often multiple thousands of dollars still left over. Exactly. And it should also say that this money goes for basically room and board and cost of attendance, you know.
All right.
Tuition fees, that sort of thing.
And those room and board scholarships are taxed, by the way, which I just found out this
year. Yeah.
Thank you very much. All right. So what's next with this legislation, Jackie?
Well, it passed committee unanimously. It's not on the Senate agenda for today, but will, as we heard, because of crossover day, get a decision by halfway through this week. Also, again, as I said, a similar bill succeeded in the Senate last year, which is where it's originating this year, only to die on the House floor. But because of those changes, we'll see how it fares.
All right. So as we mentioned before, this is kind of a big week. So I just want to touch base with all of you before we let you go about what you're watching going forward. And Lee Strubens, you're first. What are you watching going forward this week?
Take a closer look at some legislation working through the State House that's aimed at the criminal justice system. Senate Bill 6 made it out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. That bill creates an aggravated circumstance if someone charged with a drug crime does not comply with law enforcement, and that being a departure from presumptive probation. It's not a complete repeal of presumptive probation, which is something that Attorney General Jason Raunsberg ran on. This is his bill. It was introduced on his behalf by the Senate Judiciary Committee. And like I mentioned, you know, he tried failed to repeal presumptive probation last year. But Raunsberg said, this is a bill to foster cooperation between those charged with a drug crime to give information to law enforcement.
To further us finding who the drug dealers are. And that's what I've always campaigned on, always talked about as Attorney General. I'm out to get the dealers because they're infecting so many people in our community. I am still sympathetic to the users. If we can get treatment, I am for that. I have talked extensively about that. We support the governor's budget proposals for more treatment, but they are not giving any information because there's no need to, because they know by having presumptive probation, there's no need to talk to the state and give any information up. They've already got a deal when they walk in the courtroom.
Raunsberg says it gives the judge more discretion. And a prison cost estimate came with Senate Bill 6, which was very interesting.
How so?
It estimates this would increase the number of incarcerated individuals by 88. And the average time served for these individuals is 245 days at a cost of $44 per day. And the Legislative Research Council estimates that will cost an additional $849,000 a year, or $8 million over 10 years. Those prisoners would also require housing, and the women's prison is currently at capacity. They estimate 19 additional women would get sent to prison, and that estimate goes on to further say that approximately 13 additional beds would be needed to house those individuals. So it suggests either the state would have to contract with prisons out of state at a potentially increased cost, or construct another women's prison.
And that's going to resonate with lawmakers strongly, I suspect. Lee, what do you think?
It remains to be seen. I haven't checked to see if it's on the Senate schedule today, but it'll be heard within the next few days on the Senate floor.
Jackie Hendry, what are you looking forward to this week for CrossFit? Looking forward sounds like you're optimistic. What are you following? What are you following this week?
Well, a laundry list of bills hit committee this morning. So if you listen to any of these live this morning, you know more than me right now. But some of those include prohibiting collective bargaining for certain Board of Regents employees. Also a bill seeking to restructure membership of the Board of Regents entirely. All of those hit this morning. Also watching the Senate floor this afternoon for Senate Bill 66. Again, that's the establishment of the Ocheti Chicoine community-based schools. Did pass Senate Education last week after a long amendment process with Department of Education and governor's staff. So I'll be interested in hearing comments for the rest of the body that has not been following perhaps as closely to see how that fares.
Fascinating. Stephanie, they're going to have some long days between now and Wednesday, right? Tell us how that indeed works. What is that? You've been following State House for so many years. What does that look like?
There have been a few years they actually have gotten in and they've been done at a decent time. And there have been a few years where they call it covering the clock. And I have been there until 3-4 o'clock in the morning waiting for the final bills to be brought to the House of Origin and whichever way they go. So I'm with everyone and bring lots of coffee because you might need
it. How does the conversation change? Because they still have to do their due diligence and there must be some sense of frustration. This is a citizen legislature. Yeah. These are not like, it's not like being in Washington and, there's some support, but it's not the kind of support you would need to run that endurance. Do you see the tone change, Stephanie?
A little bit. And I think it depends on what party you sit on as well. They do get frustrated. There's no doubt there is some frustration. And when a debate may take place on whether it's the House or Senate floor and it's reaching into that hour or 2 hour mark, folks are getting a little bit irritated. But yet I will say they're always respectful.
Right.
They understand that everybody wants and deserves to be heard. So, you do see a little bit of both, but with some respect.
The job is too important not to take it seriously or to be casual. What are you paying close attention to this week?
Sure.
Stephanie?
Well, this week we're going to do a South Dakota focus on mental health and some of those issues that we're seeing work their way through the session. There are some mental health bills that are coming up this week. Senate Bill 2, which is going to create kind of a centralized resource information center. I'm going to be watching that. One of the main sponsors, Deb Solholt, will join me Thursday, as will Chief Justice David Gilbertson, to talk about what we've seen in terms of changes in the mental health and how that's helping everyone from individuals to families to law enforcement to the UJS. So I'm going to keep my eye on what's happening this week with mental health.
Fascinating. That was such a big conversation last year and throughout the summer. And I'm so glad that people are still have the spotlight on it. Mm-hmm. So many people who need to be helped. Stephanie Ristler, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lori.
Jackie Hendry, thanks as well.
Thank you.
Lee Strubinger, go get him.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You can keep up with the top legislative news every day by listening to the 2020 State House Podcast. For additional programming and news, listen to us online at sdpb.org. Be sure to download the free SD.net app on your mobile device for live committee meetings, floor sessions, and daily archives of the People's Business and Peer. Be sure to connect with us on social media by liking the SDPB News Facebook page and following at SDPB News on Twitter. Funding is provided in part by SDN Communications, the South Dakota Bar Foundation, Missouri River Energy Services, and Touchstone Energy Cooperative. This has been a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.